Hey guys, it's Jimmy Fallon. If you're hearing this ad for the first time, hi. If you heard it before, so man. Either way, tune into an all-new Tonight Show.
Jimmy Fallon's back for an all-new season. This week, guests include Andy Samberg, Carrie Underwood, Donald Trump, Terrence Howard, and Pharrell Williams. And tonight, Jimmy welcomes Justin Timberlake, Ellen DeGeneres, and musical guests Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Oh, and did I mention Justin Timberlake? Hey, be warned, you will laugh your tail off. You have a tail, man? The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon, tonight after your local news on NBC.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you guys. This is Good Deeds, and I'm Dr. Renee Sunday. I know. You enjoyed your holiday. I know. And it's what hot nowadays. But, you know, the thing is, you know, I always say to enjoy life. I was actually doing my travel. I wanted you to know what happened. I read a sign that actually said, have you eaten today? And then the next part of it said, have you eaten something that's wise, that actually will uplift you and will build your character? So we have to remember the things that we do, like we love our nourishment of eating food. I know most of us have maybe eaten three times a day or more. Some things were good, some things is bad. But the difference when you're building your character, when you're actually trying to get through a difficult situation, when you just don't know what to do, what we need to do, and I'm included in this, is do positive things. We have to watch what comes in our gates. And what is your gates? Our senses, things that we look at, things we view on TV, we need to make sure they're positive. Things that we hear, we have to make sure they're, you know, good things. And even things that we touch and the places that we walk to, we have to be very mindful of the things that we do because, you know, as the old people used to say, whatever habit we do, it can actually get in your eye and it can come an addiction. And guess what? That's what we're talking real talk today about addiction. And, you know, the thing is a lot of people will say that, okay, this is not me. This is not what I'm going through. Well, we're going to actually get the information firsthand from experience. Now, you know, I'm in the medical field, so I have read the books of what that addiction is. And, I'll be transparent. I was, me and my sticker bars, which is no comparison to other people, what they've gone through. I had to taper myself really, truly, and be in deep prayer to get off that sticker bar because, you know, I was gaining weight, and I know I was at high risk for things. The thing is we're going to do today, our wonderful, wonderful guest, our young lady, Ms. L'Oreal, she is going to tell us from her experience as much as she wants. And the thing is, we're going to listen to her and we're going to apply these things to our life that we can actually help somebody else. The thing is, the things we go through in life, we don't feel it when we go through it, I know. But the thing is, we actually can help someone else. And that's what L'Oreal is going to do today. And she's a delightful lady. I can even her spirit when we talked earlier, I just know that she really, really, truly likes to help people. And we're going to welcome her to Good Deeds. L'Oreal, are you here?
I am. Thank you so much for having me on your show today, Renee.
Oh, you're just so delightful. Now, let's start off. I did mess your name up, did I? Hopefully, I got it back right now.
I'll help you with that. Yeah, I'll help you with that. I'll here's where I'd like to start. I'd like to tell you and your listeners, my name is Laura Lee Rosano, and I'm a recovering addict of 17 years, and I'm really excited to share that news with you today.
Wow. Well, we're ready. Actually, let's just start off. I know you said that, but let's start off with just telling us a little bit about your journey in life. And then we're going to actually open that umbrella up more to get more detail of how you came through it and things we need to do when we're in addiction and also people that's around us.
I'd love to do that. There is so much you can do if you don't follow the addict's rules. And so how I came into this, I was born into this. I'm a big believer addiction is genetic. It very much is genetic. It's also somewhat environmental. My dad's an alcoholic. My sister's an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic addict. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My uncle's an alcoholic. I married an alcoholic. I produced an alcoholic. So you understand, not only is it genetic, it's multi-generational, but more importantly than that, because most of us will never identify the drug or alcohol as the problem, we learn behaviors that keep us from ever disclosing that. It's almost like when you're born into an alcoholic family, you're trained from a very, very early age not to rock the boat. So here's what you learn as a child of an alcoholic. You learn, don't talk, don't trust, and for God's sakes, whatever you do, don't feel. Because feelings are overwhelming and painful. And so when you learn not to talk about all the things that are building up in your body and causing you pain, of course that affects you mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And what happens in our bodies is it presents physically. And so we may say things like, oh, I'm depressed, I'm tired, my stomach's sore, my blood pressure's high, I can't sleep, I'm eating too much. So it comes out. We can't hold all this pain inside of us and it magically disappears. It comes out usually in the physical form, and that's probably what you see as a physician. You see the physical aspect of it, and because we're so trained never to disclose what's really going on and sometimes to hide it from our own selves, because you have to understand addiction is the only disease that tells you you don't have it, then you know, can you imagine going into a physician and you're saying things like, my stomach's upset, I can't sleep, and what you end up coming out with is some sleeping tablets, perhaps some Ativan for anxiety. But we never, never, never get to the primary driver. There's all sorts of things we can do once we identify, once we recognize, accept, and start sharing the truth of what's going on. Now, that sounds easy enough, but if you're from an alcoholic family, that's the hardest thing you can ever do, because what we've learned to do is blame each other for the way our lives are going, our feelings, and our behavior. So it's very multi-layered, and yet it's also very, very simple with help from outside of that family dynamic.
Wow, that's powerful. But, you know, because I hate to say it, and we know this true, as humans, we always try to blame somebody else and say it's somebody else's fault. But you know, the thing is, we have to be, and I know you will, I don't want to go too much in this statement, but I just want to say this statement. We have to be strong enough, okay, that we can actually say, okay, this is what the situation is, and we have to get help to move forward. So I commend you for bringing this to the table, what we need to address.
Yeah, but some of us don't know how to be strong enough. We were never taught to be strong. We were taught that that was very poor behavior. You don't air your dirty laundry outside the house. You keep those secrets. You stick together at all costs to your own health. We were actually taught that some of our emotions were good and bad, as if our feelings are something to be judged. I mean, let's face it, we have range of emotion. We're human, and they're all necessary. So if you're upset or sad and you're trying to avoid that all the time, you're going to need something to mood alter with. So there's so many things, whether you're from an addict family or not, I mean, that you could really use to propel healthy family dynamics, healthy communication, healthy relationships, healthy you. And so, you know, so there's, when I crossed the threshold of a treatment center, I went through a place called the Edgewood Treatment Center. It's a local rehabilitation facility for drug and mental health here in Nanaimo. Now, that was 17 years ago, and I went through, you have to understand, I wasn't the same person at all back then as I am today. I wasn't a bad person back then, I was a sick person, and I judged me harsher than anyone else ever would have. But I went through with many, many limitations. I had two plastic overweighty bags. That was my luggage. I was really virtually homeless, relationshipless, jobless, penniless, and I had nowhere else to go. So I became willing to go through the doors of a place that I looked as punitive and shameful, and something started to wake up in me there. And as that thing woke up, it was hungry, and it didn't live in shame, and it didn't live in secrecy. It lived in hope and self-worth and confidence. And so those are the things you want to find. And so many of us, if you are struggling in addiction or your family is struggling in addiction, you cannot access and utilize those those places in that family, because as a family what we learn to do is we protect and enable unhealthy behavior, and we grow sicker, not healthier. So you literally have to step outside of that family system. Doesn't mean you don't love your family system or they're a bad family system. It means you learnt this sickness from that family system, and you can't expect to get your needs met and healthy in a system that this is accumulated in. And so you know, addicts and alcoholics can't stay sick by themselves. I'm not kidding. They can't. And so for families, if they would rather than take a look at how someone else is behaving and doing and how much they're drinking, I ask them to take their eyes off those people and put it on their own self. Go to the mirror and ask yourself some tough questions. Get some help. Get some support. Make sure your backyard is in order before you go addressing anyone else, because this is for folks that aren't used to opening up and sharing, you know, emotionally, this is going to be a rocky road. I mean, there's nothing instant about getting sick, and there's nothing instant about getting better. And you do want to stay the course, and you'll need support to do that.
That's powerful, because I grew up in that era as well, from the South. That was staying in the house, like what they're saying is what happens in Las Vegas, stay in Las Vegas. That's pretty much what went on in our home as well. Because it was just not fit. And then we, as kids, when grown people talk, we were in the back of the house anyway, you know, not really in their business. But you're right. You're absolutely right. You have to be strong, and a lot of times you don't know how. I mean, even, you know, I had a conversation today to bring in a whole other issue just quickly. That stems over to a lot of things besides addiction. I mean, poverty, the mind of poverty, and saying that you can't be successful. That actually goes right on in there, what you said. But, you know, I always say we are a community.
We need to help each other.
And again, I keep saying that. I know I'm going to keep saying that through the talk. I just really give you, I just really thank you for speaking out. But let me ask you, if you will, when did you have, I guess, the light bulb experience, I guess, to say, okay, I'm not feeling right, something is not right here?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm not sure that I ever did have I shouldn't say that. There was moments throughout my history. I went into treatment into my 30s. By then, I had already been married and separated. I'd had two kids, one as a teenager in high school. So you can imagine growing up in this house where don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. Nobody's getting their emotional needs met except for the addict. Okay, our job, we were born with a job, and that is to make sure the addict or alcoholic in that family is getting their needs met. The rest of us weren't. And so what you do when you grow up in a family and you're emotionally hungry, you look for places to get those emotional needs met. Now, you won't be interested in healthy men because that's not what you know, and we can only repeat what we know. It's wishful thinking to think we can do different. If we don't have the tools or learning, we can't. We only repeat what we do, what we know. As much as we swear, we won't do that. So as a little girl, I used to fantasize about having kids. I was going to be a wonderful mother. I was going to have this fantastic husband. He was going to pay attention to me. He was going to love kids. All these wonderful things would happen. Well, I went out into the world ill-prepared and with a pattern of sabotage. All I knew how to do was, get in my way over and over and over. And so when you do that, you move around. You do the geographical cure. You do the man cure. You do the money cure. You do the job cure. You keep looking for your identity and worth outside of yourself. If I could just find it out there, I'd be okay. Well, the problem with running is everywhere I went, there I was. So you can imagine how difficult a lifestyle that is. And an addiction is progressive and terminal. So it doesn't get better. It gets worse over time. The consequences start adding up. The disaster starts adding up. And eventually, addicts and alcoholics cross a threshold, and this is in the very, very end stages, where they become apathetic. And what that simply means is they don't care anymore. That's when it gets really, really dangerous. As a society, we want to let the addict or alcoholic make the choice. When they're ready, we'll put them into treatment. Of course, that's a very skewed way to go about things because we're asking someone with an impaired thinking and thought process to make a healthy choice, which they're clearly not capable of. So, you know, so there's so many things. You know, when I saw a light bulb, I remember, I'll tell you one time when I saw a light bulb, and this isn't a very pretty story. I had been out for a couple of days partying, doing illicit drugs, hanging out with people I should never have been hung out with, and appreciating all this men attention I was getting because, again, I was emotionally hungry. This started as a little girl. I didn't understand any of this. And my husband at the time brought my little girl over. She climbed the steps, knocked on the door, and she said, "Mommy, can you please come home? I miss you." And my first response is, to my ex-husband, he was my husband then, I said, "How dare you bring her to a place like this?" So do you understand how sick the mindset of an alcoholic or addict is? Rather than say, "Oh my God, my little girl misses me, I haven't been home for 2 days, I'm so angry that the nerve of him to bring her to see me in that place." So yeah, nobody's thinking rational here. We're not. No, I wasn't, my family wasn't, and so most of the folks that are involved with addiction and in relationship with addiction, they're caught up and just as sick, if not sicker, than the addict in the family because addiction isn't about what you use. It's not about how much drugs you snort up your nose or drink or the alcohol you drink down your throat. It's about the way you think and the way you feel and the way you behave, and it's about manipulation, and it's about so many other things. So I think this is, you know, the real confusion about addiction.
Wow, that's powerful. You know, I know we've kind of been talking a lot about the themes that in your wonderful books, and we got to dive more, but you're actually telling us the themes right now. But the book cover, ladies and gentlemen, I put it in the chat. The book cover tells a story. I mean, like, you know, if you have written a book, you know how people say they look at the book and then they turn on the back and kind of see what it's the book about. But a top book cover really says it all. I commend your vision with that and, of course, the people that actually put that together. It really exemplifies the book because when I read it, I couldn't put it down. My family was like, okay, well, I got to finish the book. But let's dive in a little bit of you know, of course, we can start with your first book, The Jagged Little Edges, but you know we got to go into The Jagged Little Lies.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I commend you. I mean, you guys, she actually have gotten many stars and Goodreads and many, I mean, the reviews, and actually I had to put mine up there in Amazon. But it's really powerful because we've had so many books out there that have told us X, Y, Z. But you really tells us, wow.
Yeah. And I always want to start with me. Where's the solution to this problem? It's not in you. I can't change you. I can't make you do anything. The solution to this problem is me. And so what do I need to learn? What supports do I need to access? Am I willing enough to say, I'm in over my head and I need help? I need help. And you know that help, I need help, that is the most powerful statement we will ever make. And I encourage those folks listening that need to say that, to say it out loud, to say it with a wobble in your throat, to say it with tears in your eyes, to say it with a shake of the body, but say it, because that's when it starts. When you allow that thought to enter your body, it goes through those, you know, those longest 6 inches between your head and your heart, and you feel it, and you own it, and you know it to be true. And once you've accepted that, and we've shed the shame and we've shed all that old crap around it, we can move forward in a very, very powerful position. Ernest Hemingway says has a wonderful quote, and I love it. He says, "We are strongest in our broken places." And I believe that 100%. And it is in accessing, and, you know, I'm going to go a step further. I think all these broken places were meant to be if we've been given them by something greater than ourselves, because none of us would choose to have this type of pain. But if we've been given it, I believe we've been given it and we're supposed to have it, and then we need to go share it and understand it and become wise with it. And then it becomes part of our story, our power and who we are, and we really, really step into our bodies and ourselves and own us when that starts to happen. And you'll know it because you'll feel it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes, and I'm being transparent, you feel that you're getting better, but you know, I think one pastor, I think it was T.D. Jakes, made the analogy of a lion in a cage. The lion, even if the door opens, he'll come out for a little while, but he said, oh, wait a minute, let me go back in the cage, because he's been caged so long that he thinks that's what his life is.
Well, and that's true. And so, and let's take it a step farther, especially right now, 2014. Don't we all want a quick fix now? And then if we get hit a little stumbling block, isn't it easy to throw up our hands and say, oh, my God, see, it doesn't work anyways? We're programmed to look at all the reasons why we can't do anything. And we're programmed to live in those cages. And I say, get out of those cages. Nobody can make you stay in them, not anybody. It's nobody else making you. It's your own thinking that's making you go back into that cage. Nobody is the enemy. We don't have any. Sometimes our enemy lays right between our two ears, you know. And so if you find yourself, start to pay attention to the way you internalize. Pay attention to the messages you send yourself. Do I say can't a lot or won't? Or am I really involved in poor me? Do I feel like a victim in my life? Do things just happen to me? I have no control over anything. You know, so those are things you want to start to really look at. Because if you bought into that, and growing up in unhealthy families, we do. We buy into it because that's all we know. We don't even know we bought into it. It would be like being born into a Japanese family, which is a great family to be born into. You speak Japanese all your life and then one day say, I don't like speaking Japanese anymore. I'm going to speak English now. And your kids come along and the first thing you say to them is hello in Japanese, because it's nice to think you can speak English, but you've never been taught it. So it's as simple as that. Anything else is wishful thinking. And I think so many times we are at destiny of our own thoughts. And our own thoughts are fleeting and they're going on all the time. And yet, when I don't have the ability to debrief my thoughts and my feelings, guess what? They become my behavior. They become the things I do. And then I start this cycle of repetitive unhealthy behavior. So there's so much knowledge and resources out there. Joy is a consequence of pain and wisdom. And once you start to heal and you start this healing journey and you become comfortable with the uncomfortable emotions, you will wrap your arms around yourself, rocking back and forth in joy just to be present in this world. It's an utterly phenomenally beautiful place, and yet those of us, there's many of us walking this that can't even see a green of a tree anymore. Our minds are so loud and they don't shut up. That has simply stolen our sight. So I need what is so already around me to feed me. And if I can't stay still and see, I walk empty and I walk needing. And in my need, I will reach out to places that cannot fill this well. So it's interesting. It's a journey. I've learned that at every bump in the road now, I get on my knees and say, thank you. It isn't a punitive bump in the road. It is there to teach me. Sometimes those bumps need to get a little more harsh until I start to hear and experience and learn and change. And, and the fear really dissipates when you start to do that.
Yes, I totally agree. I'm a living witness of that because I have lost my job twice, and then the last job I went from six figures to zero. So I know how to depend.
Yes.
But Lord have mercy. But the thing that you're saying is so amazing is, and people don't do this. Because we all be in traffic at some time of a day, and we don't appreciate looking over at the pretty clouds, looking at the pretty trees, especially now the trees are beautiful, and everybody's getting their yards nice and all those things. But You know, I every morning, people think I'm weird when I say this, but every morning I have a squirrel that comes out and sits on the back patio, and he sits there, he or she sits there till the sun rises. And then as soon as the sun go up, he or she is gone to what they need to do in life. And we need to do that. Spend a little time, like you said, getting that between our ears straight, and the body is going to follow.
The body is going to follow. And isn't that funny? You have a squirrel. So do I. And he does the same thing. He comes right up on the deck and sits. And that's what I've learned to do in my recovery. I've learned not to be so busy upstairs, you know, wearing myself out when I'm not really accomplishing a whole lot. I've learned to try to quiet the mind, open the heart, and be fed. And when you can do that, you are fed in the most profound ways. Like I say, it's you know, I think I shouldn't be driving anymore because I get so distracted. I have to really focus now because it's like really this time of year is like driving in a painting. It is so beautiful everywhere you look. And those things make me squeal in amazement and excitement. So I know, you know, and that's what happens when you are from an addicted family or when you're using drugs and alcohol. You are numbing yourself to the point where nothing feeds you anymore. You're dead inside. You've flatlined emotionally. And so, you know, and often as a mother of an alcoholic or addict, we think, well, maybe if I just do this for him and maybe if I just do that for him, and we cripple addicts and alcoholics to the point of, you know, it's like if you have a little baby, you know, we're going to carry that baby on our hip till it gets so heavy and eventually it's time to put it down and let it learn to walk. Well, when we have addiction in the family, we never do let them learn to walk. We keep picking them up time and time and time again, and pretty soon they're heavier than we are and we're still dragging them on our hip. And because that's what we've learned and been trained to do. I work with families over and over and over again, and I keep wanting, here's my message, let them do whatever they need to do for right now. They're actually not really the problem. They're part of the problem. Addiction is a family disease. It's not singular. It's a family disease. So take your eyes off them and let's put them back on you. How are you feeling? What's going on in your life? Because why you're enabling is because you don't feel very good inside. You feel guilty. You feel anxious. And when the addict feels anxious, they take a drink, they feel better. Well, guess what? You do the same thing. You feel anxious, you phone and say, I'll pay your rent. You pick up you put down the phone and you feel better. You've both developed a system that works temporarily, creating long-term distress and misery. So you know, it's easy to want to make the addict and the alcoholic the focus of this, but it's not just them. This is the entire family that's affected, and the entire family needs to get support away from each other. Not, you know, they don't go into counseling together. They don't go to those support groups together. They go singularly, and then they come back collectively so that they can start communicating and behaving in a different way together.
That's very powerful what you say, because I know in the beginning of my training, and, you know, I'm telling my age now, almost 14 years ago, that's what they taught in school, is the group therapy thing, meaning the whole family. But you said something very powerful there, that, and I'm glad they have gotten away from that. Yeah, you have to work on yourself, and then come collectively to, because everybody's going to, let's say, we're going to say grieve. Everybody goes through it a different way.
That's right, and if I've got my dad there grieving, guess where my focus is going to be? It's not going to be on him. I'm going to stuff my own tears because I don't want to upset him, and I'll caretake him in his grieving, and I haven't looked after myself at all. So, you know, it's really important to step out of those family systems, and the other thing is, too, you know, all these years later, 17 years later, now I work in the field of addiction. I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict, and I, you know, where I struggle most is within that family system of mine, the one that I grew up in, because as little people, we are imprinted just as surely as a chicken or a duck is, that we carry everything we learned in those first few years, all the things we saw, felt, heard, and experienced, and knowing it or not, we do that for the rest of our life. And so when even now, today, when I have to say something that will upset my dad, I put down the phone, I have a stomachache, I feel like a bad little girl, I've done something horribly wrong, then I need to go to my support group and say, oh, my God, here's what's going on for me, here's how I'm feeling. And they're the ones that say, you're okay, you're doing great, that's all right. It's nothing wrong with saying how you feel and what you're seeing and setting some boundaries in place. That's all very, very healthy. But if I didn't have those support people and I was trying to convince my dad that I'm doing this because I love him and I love me, I'd be really, really sick. So again, this isn't about anybody's bad. This isn't about judging anybody. This is just about taking an honest look at what is working in my life. And maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe what I need to do isn't so much try to get anyone else well. Maybe it's taking some time for me. Because how well do I know me? If I'm uncomfortable talking about my own feelings, guess what? I'm emotionally immature. I haven't developed emotionally. So what that means is I might have a 45-year-old body, but I'm 13 when it comes to emotions. And you can't, you cannot adapt to society and be successful at all if you're underdeveloped emotionally. So we have to grow up all those bodies. Our physical body is a certain age, but is our emotional body that age? What's going on with our spiritual body? What do we think? Are we able to identify things that sabotage our thinking? And when we're in self-pity and all the words that say I can't and poor me, because all of those send chemicals into your body that your physical body gets sick from. So do we know much about us? Do we know more about other people than our own selves? So can I see what other people need to change? But I'm pretty blind when it comes to me. So we all are. We all are blind when it comes to ourselves. We all know what everybody else needs to do. And my message is find someone that you trust enough and that's safe enough to tell you what they're seeing in you that perhaps you need to start looking at and changing your own self. And you'll be amazed. You'll actually start to get excited when people tell you that. You won't be offensive. You won't be defensive. You'll actually be somewhat excited because you know those type of changes can make vast differences in your life and relationships.
Wow. Ooh, I like you give it the session today. You've helped all of us. I mean, because we have, you know, have grown up with XYZ, and we have to relearn things. We have to value ourselves. And you know, my mom used to say, walk in the room and make everybody turn their head. Not because I'm walking in a let's say nasty way, if you will, but just because I'm confident.
Exactly.
And I know who Renee is, and everybody needs to you know who you are.
Mm-hmm. I just met her. I met her recently, and it's interesting, Renee, because all my life I spent wanting to be just like everybody else. If only I was prettier, skinnier, smarter. Why, God, did you make me? And now I get down on my knees and I say thank you so much, because I am finally fitting into my skin. And I got to tell you, there is no high that can bring that other than, you know, doing the work.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. I hate to say it. People know me. I'm really have tears going on because you have really helped me in things that I'm going through in life. Because, you know, when you grow up a certain way, you got to relearn things, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to make sure you have to be your own cheerleader. And I said it a lot of times when I'm doing, you know, passion and purpose coaching. You have to be your own cheerleader because a lot of people, and that can be people at your church, at your job, they're not really out for you. They may be around you just to feed off of you. And, you know, because people always say I have a lot of energy, but it's not me. It's just, in my meditation, and it comes out. So, Lord, you have really fed us, but you can't get away. please give us your contact information, how we can support you on social media. We have to, you got to get this book. Now, I'm telling you now, okay? got to get this book, so give us your information.
You bet. So one of the things I want your listeners to know is if you contact me, I will answer you. Anyone that reaches out for help, I'm passionate about helping you get resources in your area, or if you just want to talk or any of that. So you can reach me on my blog, which is www.jaggedlittleedges.com. I've got a Facebook page, Laura Lee Rozzano, L-O-R-E-L-I-E, Rozzano is R-O-Z-Z-A-N-O. And I've also got a 1-800 number. It doesn't cost anyone a dime to use it, 1-800-683-0111. You can find my books on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and online like that.
Wow. Laura Lee Rozzano, you got us straight today. Everybody's taking me and saying, "Oh, she was so powerful." You're very powerful, and again, I give you a round of applause, seriously, for the things that you're doing in life that you're actually really helping people. So we thank you for taking time out and being here with us on Good Deeds.
And I thank you for listening.
Wow, that's powerful. You guys, you know, this is Good Deeds. Now, you know I didn't tell her to say any of those things. She really means it from her heart. And, you know, I said that today on Facebook. That was my video saying that you need to love yourself and see how things always work out. But you need to love yourself. And the thing is, the goal here at Good Deeds is to showcase and promote other people's their dreams, their vision, their passions, and, of course, their purpose in life. And you know how to contact us, gooddeedslive.com, and we're on the social media network, Good Deeds Radio and Television Show, and, of course, Brene Sunday, I'm the host. And hang in there, all is well. And this is Good Deeds, and I'm Dr. Renee Sunday. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.